Thank you for having me here. It's really great to be here. I wasn't always in design. I majored in biology and psychology at the University of California, Davis. I was very determined to get into dental school because that was the path that my parents wanted me to pursue. But then right after college, I got a job at Genentech. And Genentech is a pretty well-known biotech company, very big biotech company. Its parent company is Roche. Genentech makes drugs for immunocompromised patients. My main job there was to do biological and chemical testing to make sure that the environment that the drugs were being made in was aseptic as possible. After doing that for 6 years, I just wasn't happy. I thought maybe I'd be happier if I just went to dental school. So I applied, went through interviews until one interview said to me, "It sounds like you'd rather become a designer than a dentist." Because all I talked about during the interview was art and how it related to dentistry. This, of course, all stemmed from the fact that what I really wanted to do was design, but my parents never let me. I've always read and practiced design on my own for fun. And after I didn't get into any schools, I just said, let's go for it. Let's just try out design and see where I go. So I self-taught myself, took a short course to solidify my learnings, did a few pro bono jobs in order to build my portfolio. And now I've been doing design for more than 3 years and I'm loving every second of it. I've designed for fitness and travel. And I just felt like I would really enjoy going back to what I knew best, which was healthcare. So then I started researching what health tech companies out there are today. And I just went back to designing for healthcare. So now I'm designing for a company called Luma Health. In the end, I found a good compromise for both my parents and I.
Yeah, it's an inspiring story because biotechnology and design, those are so far from each other. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you must be really courageous to make this step and believe in yourself and just try out. So previously, before Luma Health, you were working at Couchsurfing, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
How did you like it? So you had to transition from a big corporation to a smaller company. So how did you feel about this kind of transition?
Yeah, so Genentech is a huge company, as you can imagine. And then joining into Couchsurfing, the company only had 10 people working in the San Francisco office. So it was a huge transition. At Genentech, a lot of things were moving very slowly because it needed to get approval by multiple departments. However, when you're working in such a small startup, things move fast and you want to try and iterate things really quickly to see if it will be successful or if it will fail. For me, it was really difficult because at Genentech, if you fail an experiment, someone can actually die. And so for me, it was really crucial to get it right the first time. And I think moving to a smaller company like Couchsurfing, I realized that it's okay to make mistakes. And it's actually encouraged to make mistakes so that you can improve quicker.
And right now you are working in Luma Health. And how many people are there?
Luma Health right now has roughly around 60 people.
Mm-hmm. So could you please tell me more about your Luma Health experience and actually how did you choose this company?
So Luma Health is a digital health solution provider. We built and continue to innovate our total patient engagement platform, which enables healthcare to unify and automate all patients' journey. At the time on the team, there was a design director, and she was taking care of both product design and brand design. So I joined the team to really help out the product design side, and I was able to bring a lot of my expertise, which was in research, into the company.
Yeah, so you were doing lots of user research.
Yes, correct.
Could you please tell me about an insight you got after one of these researches?
Yeah, for sure. So I would say one of the biggest challenging working there is designing in 2020. As everyone knows, the pandemic really affected us all. Most importantly, it has affected healthcare. The demand is really high and the time is critical. For example, video calls. Everyone knew of telehealth or telemedicine, but it wasn't critical and necessary to have until 2020. There were video products out there, but the quality wasn't to par, and that's because the need wasn't there. So now that it's essential to be able to reach your doctor remotely, every healthcare company had to invest quickly in creating a reliable way for virtual communication. This created a lot of competition. It was critical to have quality in a short amount of time. And we realized that let's just not fix what's broken. So go with video call patterns that exist out there. You have FaceTime, Zoom, Google Hangouts, and all these other video products that so many people are used to. So we needed to design it in a way that is familiar. Then you start adding features that are important to the patient to provider communication, such as a timer, video sharing, pre-qualification forms, chatting, and more.
Could you please tell me more about your design processes?
Yeah. So the design process at Luma Health is very standard. We do research first. So the research includes competitive analysis, looking at other companies out there to see what they're doing. And it also includes talking to our customers as well. So I would run user interviews just to get their feedback on the product that they're using. And based on that feedback, I will then go work with the product managers to come up with solutions on how we can solve those problems. Once we talk it through, I start designing wireframes and making low fidelity prototypes. And once I have that low fidelity prototype, I go back to the customers and I run those designs through them and get their feedback on it. So it's multiple iteration process with research. Once we feel confident about that prototype, we then design it for high fidelity. And with high fidelity, we get sign off from the entire product team for it to go live. So with going live, we decide which customers we think are best suitable for this release just to gauge their interaction with it. In that way, we can get direct feedback from them before we launch it out to everyone.
Yeah, this one is very interesting because as far as I can understand, lots of people working and living in these remote areas. And actually, lots of people came to these remote cities because they were living there previously or their families are living there right now. And they are coming back for a time when they can work remotely or just forever. So the amount of these people is enormous. And how are you managing this new type of population? And how do you keep them healthy, although they are very far from the hospital, from the doctor?
As we started designing telehealth, we realized that ease of communication was not as simple as we originally thought. We were working with thousands of practices and patients across the country. This meant that we were dealing with a huge amount of differences in the people and the needs. For starters, before COVID, people would travel far distances to see their doctors. Why? Because medical facilities might not be nearby where they live. Now, due to the traveling restrictions, patients were forced to call in and video chat with their doctors. This became a problem because, if you can imagine, most of these people live in very rural areas, which means that they don't have reliable access to internet. Then there are age gaps. Elderly patients are not as tech savvy compared to younger patients. Some elderly patients live alone and cannot get help from others. In order to have these patients be able to get on a telehealth call and be able to talk to their providers at any given time, anywhere, we needed to design it in a way where we know that it will work under low to no internet connection. And what that means is that the tool that we provide them needs to be as simple as possible. So having just the basic and having that be able to load during that short amount of time and during little to no connection is very critical. And also just making it simple and easy to use. So for people who let's say, don't speak English, they would be able to know exactly that that's the button that you turn on for to start a video call. It's a tool very similar to Zoom, where it's a software that you sign on and you start a video call. What we do is we create this platform that allows clinics to send out invitation links to their patients. So let's say the patient signs up for an appointment, and then for that appointment, the clinic will send a reminder to the patient either through text, email, or call, depending on their contact preference. And through that, they'll be able to get a link that they can click on and then start their video call from there.
And what about people, like you mentioned before, people who cannot be examined just via telehealth solution? What about these people who need to come to a doctor's office and actually be examined in person? How do you help them?
Yeah, I think that because of COVID, a lot of medical facilities had to rethink about priority. They realized that some patients, based on their symptoms, can be seen through video calls. And then there are patients who obviously need to be seen in person. So those patients, ideally, they would have to come in person. And when that's the case, then there are other solutions that Lumo Health provides, which is virtual pre-qualification forms. A lot of our forms that we send out to patients can be done through their phone, can be done through online. And when we do that, then it reduces that in-person contact. Whereas before, the patient would come into the office and sit there and fill out the forms and wait. Now they can do that quickly before even coming in.
So it saves time and resources. So obviously, the doctor can have more patients in a day. And after a patient fills in this form, what is the next step on this user journey?
After the patient fills the form, the next step is they will get a confirmation of when their appointment time and date is. And then they can confirm it on their end to let the clinic know that, yes, I am for sure coming in. And so when they do that, they'll get to the clinic. And if the clinic has the zero patient tooling available for them, what the patient can do is they can text the clinic or even call the clinic and let the clinic know that they're here.
And what was the last feature or part of the product you were working on?
The last big feature that we were working on was something called zero contact check-in. Many states had restrictions on how many people can be in an enclosed area at a time. Given how contagious COVID-19 was, medical facilities, waiting rooms were no longer a safe space for multiple ill patients to congregate and wait for their appointments. The goal was to design a way to virtually increase the size of waiting rooms to accommodate social distancing and safety protocols. In order to do this, we had to do extensive research, interviewing physicians, clinics, and patients in order to understand their needs and workflows. Time was of the essence. This feature was being worked on at the beginning of May, and at the time, some states began lifting their restrictions. If the feature did not get released quickly, it would become irrelevant. However, this was not the time to cut corners. The design still went through the multiple iterations based on quantitative and qualitative feedback before it went live. When it did, hundreds of clinics were able to allow patients to wait to see their provider from virtually anywhere, with a series of automated communications that let them know that it's their turn to see the provider and direct them to the right exam room at the right time. Face-to-face interactions were eliminated.
How it works?
So as soon as the patient arrives, they can text or call the clinic to let them know that they've arrived. And when the clinic sees that, they might ask the patient, oh, where are you waiting? Whether it's in the parking lot, whether it's in a bench, whatever the patient let them know, they would put it in the notes in the arrive column. Mm-hmm. So the clinic will have a list of patients that have arrived in that column, and they can sort based on time of arrival or time of appointment. And from there, the clinic will do what they need to do and start moving patient from arrive to waiting. So when I say move, it's literally click and drag them over. And as soon as they click and drag those patients over, the patient will then get a notification saying that you have now been checked in. And please wait until we send you a text or a call to let you know that you can come into the clinic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very interesting process.
The clinic will move the patient from the scheduling view to the waiting room.
I couldn't even imagine that before COVID times that you will need to wait somewhere else outside of the normal waiting room just to check in with your doctor. That's a creative solution. Mm-hmm. And what about post-patient experience? So let's say I've done my work with my doctor, I can go home. Do I have some forms or notifications from Luma Health?
After the appointment, the patient might get a text from the clinic that will ask them, how was your experience? And the patient can provide feedback between 1 to 10, and 10 being it was a really great experience, 1 being it was the worst experience ever. So based on that score, then the patient will actually get different types of feedback forms. So let's say if the patient responded with an 8, then they'll be sent to a different form where they will list out like the positive experience. But if the patient sends a 3 as a score, then it sends the patient to a different form that talks more about what went wrong. And in that way, the clinic will be able to gauge how their practice is doing.
So there are so many different smaller products within one. You mentioned it earlier. Patient outreach, secure chat, about patient intake, patient recall, attribution lists, consent forms. Which sub-product do you like the most? Which one is your favorite, let's say?
My favorite is definitely, it has to be zero contact waiting room, because I think that it was so relevant at the time. My second one would actually have to be broadcast. So we have this tool, it's called broadcast, and it allows the clinic to send mass messages to all their patients. And this was really critical during COVID, as you can imagine, letting patients know the new restrictions, or even now letting patients know when vaccines are available.
And what about appointment reminders? Those seem to be very popular because patients always forget about canceling or scheduling or just confirming. So this kind of notification must be crucial for hospitals.
So the best type of notification design is the ones that can be customizable. So depending on the clinic, they can actually choose when to send out reminders to patient. And I think as the clinic grows, it starts learning about the behavior of the patient, and they know exactly, okay, we have the best successful rate if we send out reminders to patient 3 days ahead of their appointment time, versus another clinic can have reminders sent out 1 day before the appointment time. And so depending on what works best for the clinic, that's the way to do it. And in terms of other notifications on the platform, we have to realize that the people that we are designing for are working on multiple things with multiple tools at one time. If they are bombarded with every single notification on the platform, that will be extremely distracting. So to prevent this, we design it in a way that allows them to customize which notifications they care about. So they will only get crucial notifications and get less distracted by pings that aren't relevant to their work.
Yeah, that makes sense, because we are bombarded by this enormous loads of information, and every single day it's more and more because more companies are going digital, and obviously they want to let us know that they are now digital and sell us more digital. Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy path for a user. And what about your platform, which helps hospitals to understand how well they are communicating right now?
Choosing the right metric to identify success is always difficult for any product. When it comes to engagement communication, it's determining whether the whole flow is successful. For example, signing up for a doctor's appointment. Was the patient able to complete their intake form? Was the patient able to book an appointment? Did the patient get confirmation? Did the patient even show up to the appointment? Was the patient able to get a follow-up appointment afterwards? Success has many different checkpoints that the patient has to hit during the journey. And this goes the same for the clinic side. So for example, as a front desk administrator, was I able to set my patient and doctor up for a successful appointment? The other metric is time. How quickly can all this be done? Where is the drop-off? Where are people having a difficult time? Are patients not completing the forms? Will they come back to do so? If yes, then when? I believe a great design is when the user is able to successfully complete a task with self-sufficiency in as little time as possible.
I know that you have the reporting product. So how do you understand which metrics are the most important to hospitals in regards to the communication?
So for our reporting features, we highlight things that we know that are critical to clinics. Some of the reports that we provide is reports on number of messages that are sent out, appointments that have been confirmed or not confirmed by patients, the feedback score, which leads to NPS scores, and also referrals, how many referrals were sent out and accepted.
Have you worked on the automated campaigns?
Yeah. So for custom action, you can actually filter out for facility, provider, appointment status, appointment type. And the patients that fall into that specific filters will get an automated set of messages that are best fitting with them. So let's say you want to start a campaign of distributing vaccines, right? And you want to send it out to patients that are 65 and older, and only those patients, you would filter out those specific patients and then have a series of messages that will be set up for, let's say, your first dose of vaccine, then your second dose of vaccine. And only those people that are 65 and older will get that series of messages.
And also, you're working only with phones, or you can connect with Viber, WhatsApp, or only with phone messaging, like SMS?
Only with phone messaging for now, because we need to be HIPAA compliant, so we need to be as secure as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. What is a typical day like?
A typical day for me at Luma Health is I get up, I join a lot of meetings to talk about what our upcoming projects are, what went well, what else we need to do. And then afterwards, I will sync up with my PMs to talk about ideas on how we want to solve the problems. So the majority of my time in the morning is all about planning. And then later in the afternoon is when I start doing execution of just drafting out designs, making wireframes, making high fidelity prototypes and testing it.
And you mentioned testing. So you are working a lot with hospitals and with just normal patients to test your solutions, test your ideas. What is your tip to a healthcare designer who is doing it for the first time in their life?
My tip for designers getting into healthcare design is to really learn the area, to be able to speak the language and understand what the clinics are talking about. There's a lot of terminology that I had to learn when I joined Luma Health. And I think the more that you learn about the different clinics out there, the different specialties, the different practices, the better it is to communicate with your users, especially during user interviews. And when you're able to speak their language, they feel more open to you and they feel like they can let you know their true feedback and their concerns. And from there, you're able to connect with them easier.
Which resource would you recommend to a person to just get some understanding of which terms medical practitioners are using, or what should they understand better before talking to them?
Yeah, I feel like this is definitely one of those things where you learn when you're doing it, and like you'll just hear words that you might not know. And what I do when I hear those things is I go back to my team and I say, oh, I heard they were talking about this. What does this mean? And I rely a lot on the help that I get from my teammates because they've been in this field, in this company for so long that they know what those terminologies mean.
In terms of communication with product managers, in each company, the processes are very different. So how does it work in your company?
Yeah, I think it's very dynamic in the way that sometimes both the product managers and I come in with just no idea of how to solve the problem. And we together work together to come up with ideas to solve the problem. And so in those times, the product managers actually join me during the research. So they'll sit in during the user interviews to get a good understanding of where the users are coming from. Then there are other times where the product managers might know a lot more than I do. They somehow have gotten a lot of background, maybe from our leaders, maybe from talking to customers already when I didn't have the time to do so. So then they would come to me with the information and let me know, these are the goals and let's make a design to solve these very specific goals.
How do you prioritize your tasks? You are, let's say, feeling unfocused. What do you do?
In our company, we actually have these things called pods. So pods are broken up in different segments of the product. So I specifically designed for a specific set of products tooling. So my focus is mainly on that pod. And then if the other pods need help, then I would jump in to help out with designs there. And during those time, that's when I really break down my tasks for the day. I would say, okay, for Monday, I'm just going to work on this design versus on Tuesday, I'll get started on this design. I have to break it down in like the calendar, actually, like letting people know, don't bother me during this time. I'm busy working on this. And then I'll have open time that they can schedule meetings with me otherwise.
That's a great thing because you're not bothering a person when he's deep thinking, obviously, because he's so into the solution, into the problem. He's in a state of a flow. It's a very good, actually, to dedicate some specific time to work on some problem or some task, question. And yeah, you just do not have any other incoming requests. Just block them all and focus on one thing. Mm-hmm. In the last 5 years, what new belief or behavior or habit has most improved your life?
In the last 5 years, I think the biggest behavior or habit that I've changed is the need to be right. I think that being in research prior to becoming a designer, there was always this need to be right. And I always felt like there were consequences if I wasn't right. And now that I'm a designer, I realize that there is no right. Like, there is not a correct design. Being correct for a design is very subjective and it matters on the context. And the design has to keep improving. And I don't think that it can ever reach to that point where like, this is the perfect design. There's nothing more that you can do to it. I think there's always new perspective from the users that will give you that aha moment and say, I didn't even think of that. Like, let's talk more about it. Let's improve it even more.
I absolutely agree. yeah, there is no hard stop for this. And what is your biggest learning from your manager, because you have design director?
Biggest learning from my manager is that it's okay to take time for yourself. I think that everything that's happening, I've always felt the need to always be there all the time, because I felt like I needed to solve a lot of people's problems because I'm in healthcare and all these people need so much help right now. And there was a point where I worked so much and my manager actually let me know constantly, it's okay to take a break. It's okay to have a mental health day. And what I realized is that when I take those moments to kind of step back and get refreshed, it has helped me so much more than just kind of pushing through it and churning out designs in order to meet the demands. When you step back and you get time to think, you're more creative and you can solve problems better. And my manager has been so great at reminding me to do that every now and then.
This actually brings us to fast fire questions. And the first one would be three things you do to support your mental health at work.
I think the first thing would definitely be try to have meetings that aren't about work. So right now we all work remotely and I make it an active effort to have one-on-ones with my colleagues where we just talk about anything other than work. We catch up on our lives and like get to know each other better. And during those meetings, I'm not exhausted rather than like regular Zoom meetings all the time. I get refreshed. And after leaving that meeting, I feel refreshed to join another meeting that's actually about work. So I would say have fun Zoom meetings for sure with your colleagues. And then the second one would be to take walk breaks. Actually go outside and take a 10-minute walk if you need to. And I do it rain or shine. If it's raining, I still try my best to go outside and just get that fresh air, because I've noticed that the days where I don't get to go outside at all are the days where I'm the least creative. And then the third one is definitely don't take things too seriously. I think that sometimes it feels like you need to get this right, get this design out there as soon as possible for the customers. But realizing that, you know, it's okay if you don't hit the deadline, as long as your goal was to make it as quality as possible. Like you want to put as much time and thought into it to make sure that the product that you're putting out there is the solution that the customers actually wanted in the first place, and not to rush things and just be more relaxed when you're doing work. Because if you're always stressed out, then you're not thinking critically enough to solve the problem.
It totally makes sense. Second question is, what are you most skeptical about in healthcare? Or maybe even specifically in patient engagement solutions?
What I'm most skeptical about? That's such an interesting question. I don't know if there's anything I'm skeptical about, but there are fears that I have in terms of age gaps. Like, for example, my mom, she had a really difficult time signing up for the vaccine. And everything has been digital recently. And it took her forever to get through the process of signing up for the vaccine. And when she was able to do it, she was so happy about it that she was able to do it on her own. And I looked at the tool that she used, and in a way, it was relatively simple for me as a younger person who knows technology so well. I was really proud of her for being able to do it on her own, but it makes me think of all the other older patients out there, all the ones that don't know technology and all the ones that don't know English, how are they able to navigate through this now and also in the future? As technology keeps growing, how can we accommodate to these type of users and make it easier for them?
If you could write anything on a billboard, what would it be?
Your questions are so interesting. If I can write anything on a billboard, what would it be? I don't want to sound so cheesy. I think the one thing that I always aspire to be is to always leave a positive impact on someone else's life. I think waking up every day, I just think, how can I make anything even as small as like just making someone else happier in some sort of way, or making a positive impact, inspiring someone else, being a mentor to someone else. To me, that's very important. So if I can write anything on a billboard, it would be make a positive impact on someone's day.
That's a very good one. Indeed. And you're also a mentor at Springboard, right?
Yeah, I'm a mentor at Springboard. There are so many people like me who don't have a design background, who are really passionate about design. And I love helping those type of people because I know exactly what they're going through and how passionate they are about design. So it's one of the things that I enjoy doing the most.
Also, you must meet many different types of designers, because some are great graphic designers, great visual artists, some are great in user research.
I think that's the amazing part, is how diverse the design community is. If you really step back and take a look, everyone is so talented in so many different ways.
Thank you so much for the conversation. I really enjoyed it, and some of the answers were really insightful to me, and I'm sure they will be to the listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really fun. I would love to hear the answers to your questions from yourself. Like, I'm interested to know, what would you write on a billboard?
Maybe I'll type enjoy, because we are so much into the results. And we are so rarely into actually our own feelings about what we are doing right now and about the process. Because the only thing that we have is right now, is the moment. And the results, maybe they won't be. And again, it's not only your fault and it's not only your success. It's always just the universe helping you, patience helping you. Your manager helping you, is the whole world helping you, and you're doing your best. And then what you can do is just enjoy the moment. So that's what I would write.
Right.
Thank you for asking.
That's beautiful.